From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. NSA leaker Edward Snowden, his face plastered across screens all over the globe, has made a run for it. From Hong Kong to Moscow to who knows where next. The U.S. Justice Department is hot on his trail. It's revoked his passport. It's filed espionage charges for his unveiling of a huge U.S. government program of global surveillance. What's right here? This hour on Point, Edward Snowden on the run, the issues his case raises, and how this story should end. In this hour, we'll look at Snowden's run, then the big issues on the table, with guests including the attorney who defended the New York Times in the famous Pentagon Papers case that is being raised again today around Edward Snowden. But first, to the NSA leaker and the U.S. government's pursuit. Mark Mazzetti is Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, national security correspondent for the New York Times, author of The Way of the Knife. He joins us from Washington. Mark, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So what are the charges that the United States is prepared to bring against Snowden at this point?
Well, they're going to try to charge him under the Espionage Act, which is maybe familiar to many of your listeners, which is the act of the early part of the 20th century.
1917, I think. That's
correct, that the Obama administration has used to try to charge people with leaking classified information. And as is well known at this point, there have been more charges, there's been more aggressive prosecutions under the Obama administration than any previous American administration combined. So the as was expected, we learned on Friday, the Justice Department was charging him under the Espionage Act, and what we're still unclear about is whether the unsealing of these charges may have forced Mr. Snowden's next move.
How did he get out of Hong Kong? We're told his passport was revoked. Was it revoked after he left, or how did that happen?
His passport was revoked, but it does also appear, and so it does appear it was revoked after he left, but it was also pretty clear that the Hong Kong government wanted to wash its hands of this situation. So even if his passport had been revoked when he was still in Hong Kong, I think there's a good question about whether he might have been able to get out anyway. I think from our coverage that my colleague Keith Bradshaw in Hong Kong had a very good story today, basically saying that Hong Kong wanted to get him out of there and let him go somewhere else and not deal with the headache. He was allowed to get on the plane, as we know, to Moscow, and then the question is, from where does he go from Moscow? And there's all sorts of questions about, you know, what could have been done differently. One of them is the issue of whether the U.S. should have pushed Interpol to issue what is called a red notice, which would require anyone, any law enforcement agency to pick him up.
And now off to Moscow, and from there, a little mystery as we speak. We'll see when and if that gets cleared up. Remind us of just who Snowden was and what he has already revealed to the world that has the U.S. government so up in arms.
So Edward Snowden is a former a contractor for the National Security Agency, and he was a computer systems administrator for Booz Allen Hamilton was his latest job, which is a large American firm doing a lot of contract work for the NSA and other and American intelligence agencies. And as a result of his work inside the sort of computer systems of these companies, he was able to vacuum up a large number of documents, highly classified documents, and give them both to the Guardian newspaper and a smaller set to the Washington Post. And so that has set off this extraordinary story where he, you know, for the first time revealed himself when he was in Hong Kong, and now, you know, it's anyone's guess really where he's going to go next. The latest does seem to be that it was thought he might be on a plane to Cuba. And so right now, though, there's a lot of journalists on the plane to Cuba, but it appears no Edward Snowden.
And the substance of what he's revealed at this point, how much was known? How much was holy cow?
Well, there were, I think, broad outlines of some of what he has revealed that were known, although the details are pretty extraordinary, and there are some, actually, things that we really didn't know about. So the things that have gotten the most attention, first and foremost, are the program that the NSA has to get all the what they call the metadata, data call logs of phone calls of Americans, and it is information about who called whom and the duration of the call, and then that is stored. And then on another court order, it is can be sifted by the NSA for counterterrorism purposes. Another program, which is called the PRISM program, is a program where the NSA tries to get information from all the big American computer companies like Google, Yahoo, Facebook, and when they're conducting these counterterrorism investigations. So it's really, we've learned about the extent that the CIA works, the NSA works hand in glove with both the telecom companies and the computer internet service providers to get information.
There was the idea that they wouldn't actually read any of those things, but then we got the further insight that they might in certain circumstances. If it was in the context of looking at what was going on overseas, they could actually look into the calls, the emails.
That's right, and we're still getting more information about these programs, but the U.S. government insists that the data is stored but is not sifted through without a specific reason to go do it. So you need another order, you need another step to take to start doing search queries based on that data. But there's also speculation, and some people have said that you even when the data is being stored, people can run algorithms in order to look for patterns of behavior. So, I mean, this is all still it's very highly classified information, it's very highly classified programs, and we're still trying to learn as much as we can about these programs. But it certainly has caused all of us and the public to rethink, of course, what this whole idea of big data and what the government does and what the government knows about all of our interactions with each other in our daily lives.
So now Snowden is out of Hawaii, out of Hong Kong, out in the world, the U.S. apparently in hot pursuit. What do they appear to be most concerned about, Mark? To make an example of him, to prosecute him under this 1917 Espionage Act, to try and shut down some of this kind of leaking? Or is it the, I don't know exactly what, but it's been reported 4 laptops in his possession, thumb drives, I don't know what, but reportedly a lot still in his possession of U.S. intelligence?
Well, I think they would probably first and foremost want to get him as quickly as possible to stop any more bleeding from their point of view that could happen. I mean, we know that
presumably he has a lot more information.
He may, and he knows there's a lot in his head. Whether or not he's carrying laptops, he knows a great deal about secret programs that he presumably has not even leaked yet. And he has been very careful and selective about what he has chosen to give to news organizations. So they would want to capture him before he did any more, from their point of view, more damage, and then try to prosecute him and send him to jail. But it's at this point, it's still a great deal. It's a very embarrassing situation for the U.S. government that he is hopscotching to these countries that are obviously have less than cordial relations with the United States, and thus far he has eluded this dragnet.
If he has such a trove on him, in thumbnails or laptops, whatever it is, can you imagine he would get out of Hong Kong in the sphere of China or out of Moscow without the Chinese or Soviets trying to get hold of that stuff, Mark?
Well, I would be speculating about what role the Chinese or the Russians might have had in terms of trying to get access to his information. Certainly
we just don't know.
At the Chinese perspective, they would want information, although there's a very delicate moment in U.S.-Chinese relations, and there are some people who believe that the Chinese would be better overall that the Chinese just got him out of their country and maybe sacrifice some of the things that he might know or might have if they're playing for the long game in trying to better relations with the United States.
It was very interesting in the Hong Kong government press release saying that he had left Hong Kong. The last paragraph, a little stinger, says, meanwhile, the Hong Kong government has formally written to the U.S. government requesting clarification on earlier reports about the hacking of computer systems in Hong Kong by U.S. government agencies, that part of Snowden's leaks.
That's right. So while he's in Hong Kong, he gives a interview to a Chinese newspaper that exposes the extent that the United States is doing its own hacking into Chinese networks. And so this was another thing that certainly got American officials mad, but it also raised the stakes a bit in terms of trying to maybe get some Chinese officials to help him out with his case, because obviously he knows a great deal about what the U.S. government is doing in this world.
Mark Mazzetti, does it chill reporters? Does it chill you that they are going after him with espionage charges? If another Snowden comes to you, would you have any qualms about picking up and publishing what he brings you if it looks credible because of concern that the U.S. government might come after either the leaker or yourself?
You know, we're in the business of printing information and in the business of talking to people from all walks of life and from whether in or outside of government. And certainly if someone comes to us with information that we would be able to look at and determine whether it's in the public's interest to report, we would do it and we would continue to do it.
If they put him in jail for life, would it shut down that kind of conduit, do you think?
Putting him in jail?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that he seemed to be quite conscious that what he was doing might put him in jail and might put him in jail for life. He in his first interview was cognizant of the fact that what he was doing would be perceived to be illegal by the U.S. government, even though he was seeing it as an act that needed to be done.
Do you think he's a spy? Espionage act. Do you think he's a spy, Mark?
No, there's no evidence that he's a spy.
But it's the Espionage Act. We'll see. Mark Mazzetti with the New York Times. Always great to have you. Thank you so much for being here.
Sure. Thanks very much.
We're talking about Edward Snowden on the run and all the issues. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about Edward Snowden on the run, the NSA leaker facing charges of espionage, and what is the right outcome for this case. Let me just give you a little flavor of what's going on here. It is a global story. As we speak, no one's quite sure where Snowden is, out of Hong Kong, into Moscow, the transit lounge anyway, overnight there, and then, well, we'll see. Yesterday, lots of talk about this on the Sunday talk shows. Here was Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein on Face the Nation, CBS. She's head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, saying she didn't think of Edward Snowden as a whistleblower. She wants him caught, brought back for trial.
I want to get him caught and brought back for trial. And I think we need to know exactly what he has. He could have a lot more. It may really put people in jeopardy. I don't know. But I think the chase is on.
The chase is certainly on. Where is he headed? Who would take him? Not entirely clear. Yesterday, speaking through a translator with reporters in Hanoi, Vietnam, Ecuador's foreign minister, Ricardo Patino, said Edward Snowden had asked for asylum in his country, Ecuador.
I can only confirm that we did receive the request for asylum from Mr. Snowden, and we are analyzing it.
WikiLeaks says it's been helping. Earlier this month, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange gave advice to Edward Snowden. This was talking with CNN's AC360 with Anderson Cooper. Here's Julian Assange saying he should go to Latin America.
I would strongly advise him to go to Latin America. Latin America has shown the past 10 years that it is really pushing forward in human rights. There's a long tradition of asylum.
So here we are with this case spread before the world and huge issues behind it. Globally, obviously, people paying close attention, and in this country, Americans paying close attention to what this man has done, to what he's shown, to what it means. You can join the conversation this hour. Where in the world is Edward Snowden? Are you glued to this global hopscotch? Where do you hope he ends up? Is this man a spy, a traitor, a hero, a conscientious objector? And what should the U.S. do with a guy walking around the planet with a suitcase maybe full of a million secrets? I want to get into the big issues that are raised here. Joining me now from New York is James Goodale. He's a famed First Amendment attorney. He was chief legal counsel for the New York Times and represented it in four cases that went to the U.S. Supreme Court. In 1971, he argued for the paper's right to publish the Pentagon Papers, revealing U.S. government deceit in the Vietnam War. He's now an attorney for the law firm Debevoise and Plimpton. His new book, Looking Back, is Fighting for the Press, the Inside Story of the Pentagon Papers and Other Battles. He's also looking forward and has been watching the Snowden story very closely. James Goodale, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. Do you see grounds for bringing espionage charges against Edward Snowden?
Yes, the government has successfully brought charges under the Espionage Act. against leakers over the last 20 or 30 years. Obama has brought more than anyone else. He's got six outstanding, and this is the seventh. So there are grounds for it. But I would like to point out that while the charges are brought under the Espionage Act, they're not brought for espionage. And that's one of the ironies here, because what Snowden has done here is he's leaked. And the recipients of the leak, that's to say the Washington Post and the Guardian, have a First Amendment right to publish that information. So I think it's important for us to realize we're not talking about espionage, even though the charges are brought under the Espionage Act.
So what would Snowden be seen as guilty of under the charges as filed? Is it clear?
Well, he's charged under a section that penalizes communications of national defense information. And so that's the technical basis for getting him. I might say my own personal opinion on this is I don't usually agree with Dianne Feinstein. I think she's one of the problems in dealing with our new information age. But I do think that if you work for any entity, including NPR, if you leak, you do it expecting you're going to be facing charges for it. And certainly that was Snowden's expectation. And I think Ms. Feinstein said yesterday he should come back and face the music. And I think that he should do that, too. And I believe that running into the hands of the Russians creates a bad image and reminds us of the real spies back in the 1950s, like Guy Burgess and the Cambridge Five, who actually were spies and went to Russia. And I think it's unfortunate he's done that. I think he's done us a great public service, because Obama says now, because of the leak, we're going to have a public debate. But I think that when you are a dissident, you let the stuff out and then you face the music.
How is this case like and unlike the case of Daniel Ellsberg, who, of course, you know, hoisted all those Pentagon papers around back in the days when it wasn't thumb drives, but huge piles of photocopied papers? Is Snowden like, unlike Ellsberg here in your?
Well, no, I think he's generically speaking, very much like Ellsberg. Ellsberg and Snowden are leakers. The New York Times, which published the Pentagon Papers, and the Washington Post, which published Snowden's stuff, are what we call leakies. So on that level, they're identical. And Ellsberg thought from the very beginning he was going to face some sort of punishment. So he was a civil disobedient. And to refresh your audience's recollection, if any, the government did bring charges against Ellsberg, but they blew it because before they brought the charges, or at the time of it, they broke into his office. And when that was brought to the attention of the judge who was trying Ellsberg, he said, this is too much and the case is off.
Snowden reportedly could go to prison for life if all the charges were brought and no deal was made and everything went to the heaviest. Is that kind of sentence look appropriate to you?
No, not at all. I mean, I think this is where the rubber hits the road, because if you violate a law and the same time do a public service, and the president says it's in effect, great, we got this information, now we can talk about it, to go to life is ridiculous. I think that the hard issue, particularly in the digital age when this information is flying all over the place, mm-hmm. is what exactly is the right type of punishment. Now, you know, Obama's had six other leakers, one of whom was an NSA employee, somewhat like Snowden, who's an independent contractor, whose name is Thomas Drake. And he leaked information about procurement policies at the NSA, which weren't being carried out in the best interest, economic interests of the country. And they indicted him, too. But when the judge heard the case, he said, you know, this is ridiculous, and for all practical purposes, he gave him a fine. So I think what we got to start thinking about now is what's the appropriate punishment for people who bring information to the attention of the public, which, by the way, the president says is good for us to know.
Yes, though he could have put it out there himself, I suppose, or directed somebody to get into a status where we might have known himself and didn't. I want to put this in the context of the sort of public conversation around this. Let me put a couple of things in front of you, James Goodell, with us from New York, author of Fighting for the Press. He was there in the heart of the Pentagon Papers story when it went to the Supreme Court. Lots of heat around that back in the day, revelations about the Vietnam War. Now he's drawing parallels to what's going on today, compare and contrast. Of course, lots of people are looking at this. This was Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Republican, yesterday on Fox News Sunday, saying he sure wants Snowden tracked down.
I don't think he's a hero. I believe he hurt our nation. He compromised a national security program designed to find out what terrorists were up to. So the Freedom Trail is not exactly China, Russia, Cuba, Venezuela. So I hope we'll chase him to the ends of the earth, bring him to justice, and let the Russians know there will be consequences if they harbor this guy.
Well, we'll see where the Freedom Trail goes here. There's Lindsey Graham. Here's Glenn Greenwald. He working for The Guardian, he got a lot of this from Snowden, got it out into the public, talked with us shortly after he did that here at On Point, and yesterday was on NBC's Meet the Press, saying that Snowden shouldn't be charged under the Espionage Act because he wasn't working for a foreign government.
He could have sold this information for millions of dollars and enriched himself. He didn't do any of that either. He stepped forward, and as we want people to do in a democracy, as a government official, learned of wrongdoing and exposed it so we could have a democratic debate about the spying system. Do we really want to put people like that in prison for life when all they're doing is telling us as citizens what our political officials are doing in the dark?
James Goodell was in the middle of the Pentagon Papers story. James, what's at stake here? I mean, we can see for Snowden there are issues around his very freedom. What about for the press?
Well, the press issue here is an important issue because there is an argument, I make it in my book, that Obama effectively is out to criminalize the journalistic process, news gathering process, by making those who gather the news responsible criminally for what they do. Well, that's to be distinguished from what I said earlier, where we have the leaker, as to whom I think some penalties should apply. I don't think any penalties apply to you, Tom, or to any other reporter, because the First Amendment protects you. But what is of concern is what the Obama administration has been doing, and it's particularly evident in what we call the Rosen case, Rosen being a reporter for Fox News who got a leak about the Korean nuclear program.
Yep.
And the government went in and said, we want to get his records because he is a co-conspirator. That is someone who is criminally responsible under the Espionage Act for what he does. And all he was doing was gathering the news. That is very, very, very bad.
That was the situation with the Times in the Pentagon Papers era. That was the
No, it was not. Now, what happened in the Times case is the government tried to censor the Times. It came in, okay, we're going to stop the publication, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the main case that happened. You are right in saying it did thereafter happen to the Times, but it didn't happen. Nixon tried to criminalize the press he put together a grand jury. He wanted to indict the Times. He wanted to indict its reporter. And he wanted to criminalize the whole process. He failed in that. The grand jury gave up after 18 months. But what is bothering a lot of us is that the president has a grand jury that is sitting down in Virginia, Maryland,
mm-hmm.
That is investigating Assange. And my view is that if Obama goes forward with that prosecution, it's going to be very bad for the press because he will say that Assange conspired with Private Manning, Manning being the person on trial now,
yep.
for leaking to Assange.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Assange is certainly a publisher because Assange published the same stuff the New York Times did. So that's a bad case. If Assange can be found guilty of conspiring as a publisher with a leaker, that means we're all in, as I say, deep yogurt.
So in your view, then, if Edward Snowden, instead of going to The Guardian and The Washington Post, what if he had just taken those thumb drives and plugged them into the web and put all this on the web himself, published it to the web? Would he then be a journalist in your view? Would he then be?
No, he you sound like my law professor with that hypothetical. Well, I don't think he can.
That's where we are, though. That's the age we live in. Anybody can publish.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody's everything. That's for sure. I think that he's disqualified himself for saying he's a journalist when he's violated the law in the first instance. So I don't think you can save yourself with that argument. But that doesn't apply to Assange. Assange is the leaky. Everyone says, well, Assange leaked. He didn't leak. He shared his information with the New York Times.
If Edward Snowden gave his thumb drives to his brother and his brother put them on the web, is his brother a publisher?
A thumb drive to his brother.
You're just putting this curtain between. As long as I hand it to somebody else and they put it up, then I'm not the publisher and they are?
Yeah. You could come up with a fact pattern with someone who's independent of the source as a publisher, as you suggest.
James Goodale, author of Fighting for the Press, please stand by. Lots of callers here. And in a moment, we're going to hear from an attorney who thinks these Espionage Act charges are just right. Andy's calling from Beaufort, South Carolina. Andy, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I think that it's really quite clear and simple. Mr. Snowden is nothing but a honest American trying to do a good deed for the rest of the country by exposing and bringing to light the fact that the U.S. government is basically collecting information about everyone without letting them know.
What if that puts Americans, allies, U.S. foreign policy at risk, Andy?
I don't think so. I think the information is simply a fact of what is going on, not a fact of any specific information about our services and what they're doing or any of the things that they're engaged in. I think it's simply bringing light on something that's been very kept in the closet, very opaque.
So you see him as a good American just trying to let us know what's going on? Let me hold that, if I may, Andy, and I appreciate your call. Patricia in Woodstock, Virginia. Patricia, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes. You know, when Snowden took these jobs, he's violated an oath that he took with the CIA, NSA, and Booz Allen. And he was entrusted with a top-secret clearance. He knew if he broke those rules, he could compromise our U.S. collection, operatives in the field. We're only doing this to prevent future attacks. These are desperate times that require desperate measures. If just one life is saved, I am willing to sacrifice my privacy. Who are these people that are hollering their privacy is violated? Are they hiding something? And another thing, maybe this is just the tip of the iceberg. Perhaps Snowden is part of a larger conspiracy. Look at the countries he's going to. Red flag here.
Desperate times, desperate measures, and you're willing to accept it. Patricia, I appreciate your call as well. James, we just have a minute before the break, but what about that formulation? Desperate times, desperate measures, lock them up.
When we have desperate times, we ought to be very careful what sort of measures we put into place because we're tempted by the fear of the unknown. And I think that's what the government is sort of getting away with here. The programs that we've talked about are known. I knew all about them before I read about them. And secondly, their constitutionality has never been tested. And so when the president said it, he did on Charlie Rose, they're constitutional. Well, I just wouldn't accept that.
We've got a lot more to look at. William Banks joins us in just a moment, maybe a little more sympathetic to the government's approach here. James Goodale raises large questions today, as he did all the way back in 1971. He was chief counsel for the New York Times in the Pentagon Papers case. He writes about that and current dynamics around information and its flow in the press in his new book, Fighting for the Press, The Inside Story of the Pentagon Papers and Other Battles. Others, well, that might include Edward Snowden. You can join us this hour. How do you see this man? Spy, traitor, hero, conscientious objector? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Edward Snowden on the run, the NSA leaker facing charges of espionage, and what's the right outcome in this case? Charges under the Espionage Act, in any case, out of 1917, are being applied here in 2013 under the Obama administration, which has been most aggressive in applying this old law. Speaking yesterday with ABC's This Week, NSA Director General Keith Alexander said that by revealing NSA's use of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and the FISA Amendment Act, damage to American intelligence efforts against terrorism was significant.
These are two of the most important things from my perspective that helps us understand what terrorists are trying to do. And if you think about that, what Snowden has revealed has caused irreversible and significant damage to our country and to our allies.
But there is more than one way to look at this man. Yesterday on CNN's State of the Union, Republican Kentucky Senator Rand Paul defended Edward Snowden as nobler than the actions of the U.S.'s own National Intelligence Director, James Clapper. Of course, back in March, Clapper told lawmakers that the government was not collecting data on millions of Americans. Here was Rand Paul yesterday.
I do think that when history looks at this, they're going to contrast the behavior of James Clapper, our National Intelligence Director, with Edward Snowden. Mr. Clapper lied in Congress in defiance of the law in the name of security. Mr. Snowden told the truth in the name of privacy. So I think there will be a judgment because both of them broke the law, and history will have to determine.
This was, of course, back in March. Clapper was asked by Oregon Senator Ron Wyden whether the NSA collects, quote, any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans. No, sir, Clapper responded, then adding later, it does not wittingly. Well, look at what we have learned. James Goodale is with us. He's a First Amendment lawyer, former chief legal counsel for the New York Times, often before the Supreme Court in that capacity, in particular in the Pentagon Papers case, 1971, which he writes about in his new book, Fighting for the Press, The Inside Story of the Pentagon Papers and Other Battles, joins us from New York. With us right now from Syracuse, New York, is William Bill Banks. He's director of the Institute for National Security and Counterterrorism, professor of law and international affairs at the Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Syracuse University, co-author of National Security Law and the Power of the Purse and Counterterrorism Law. William Banks, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
So what do you think of what's unfolding here? Does the U.S. government have a good case against Edward Snowden, Mr. Banks?
I think they have a strong case on the basis of the Espionage Act. I was very interested in Jim Goodale's description of the Pentagon Papers case. I think he's correct that the parallels are quite interesting. One of the differences between then and now in the case of Daniel Ellsberg that there was no showing by the government that what Ellsberg did resulted in harm to the national defense of the United States. Indeed, many of us will recall that the case against the New York Times to try to stop the paper fell apart because the government couldn't show any harm. There's a good chance that what Snowden has done has caused harm to the United States. I think Director Alexander overstated the case a bit in the quote that you just gave yesterday. But he did reveal the names of the companies that have, and by implication, those who have not signed on to the directives that the government had to reveal the real-time communications of those who are abroad.
Google and Skype and on down the list, yeah.
Yeah, right down the list. So I think there were nine companies. Mm-hmm. So if you're the terrorists know now if they're going to have to deal in digital space, they're going to deal with somebody that's not on that list.
Was the Espionage Act, 1917, was it written for leakers or spies?
It was written for spies. It's a poorly matched legal standard to apply to leakers today, and it's simply the best tool that the government has. Should mention that they also, of course, charged Snowden in this original charging sheet with theft of government information, and that charge may stick as well. I believe there are three charges under the Espionage Act in this one, so in each charge contains a maximum penalty of 30 years. Those could, or 10 years, excuse me, so 3 times 10. That could expand if they get him back and add to the charges.
He's 30 years old. That could be life. Do you think he's in a situation to, maybe if he wants to, long distance, cut some kind of deal? Does he have enough clout, given what may be in his suitcase, to say, you know, let's make a deal?
I think a deal is likely. I think a trial would be difficult. It's, you know, one of the issues that hasn't been mentioned on the program today is the damage that could be done in a trial of having to expose additional classified information so that a jury could decide Snowden's culpability. So I think there's a great incentive on the government side to cut a deal to stop the bleeding, as you put it earlier, and, of course, from his side, to cut down on the amount of time that he might spend behind bars.
William Banks, stand by in Syracuse, New York. Jim Goodale in New York, what about this difference in harm that might be described out of Snowden's releases in the Pentagon Papers?
Yeah. I don't fully agree with the distinction that was made because the Supreme Court, at least some of the justices, were convinced that there was damage. But nonetheless, the First Amendment triumphed and trumped the damage. And what I did in my book is I went back and tried to see if those claims were correct. And I've now reached a judgment that every time the government says there's been damage, I say to myself, prove it to me, because frankly, I don't believe it. In this particular case, the phone program, for example, as distinct from the prison program.
The metadata collection.
The metadata program.
Who called whom, where, when, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I had a TV program one time that dealt with national security issues, and I did a program with James Bamford, he being an author of NSA history and a real expert. And we went through the whole phone program, which in fact had been disclosed by a gentleman named Klein, I think, in 2007, and he worked for AT&T. And I went and played that program back. There's nothing new in the disclosure that was made. Then I went back and looked at the Pulitzer Prize-winning story that James Risen and Lickenbaugh wrote about what seems to me to be the prison program. And I can't see that much difference between their story and the story that was leaked.
But Bill Banks is saying, look,
it's all out there.
Well, but if Al-Qaeda, you name it, used to think they could communicate over digital means and have some kind of cover, and now they've been fully, you know, lit up in neon, alerted that that is well surveilled by the NSA. If they go to carrier pigeons, you know, or they get off the web, is that harm to the U.S., Jim?
How dumb do we think these terrorists are? If you look at the roster of these terrorists, they've got graduate degrees. Their skill in cryptography, at least before the end of the last century, was even probably greater than the United States, at least as this layman could say. I mean, to think that a terrorist does not think that his email is being monitored is a false assumption.
Well, how does that square with the assertions that a dozen or dozens of potential plots have been disrupted by exactly these programs if they're so smart that they're not vulnerable?
Well, we were smarter in picking up that information, and they get careless. And one of the things they don't do, which they could do, and it may be one of the results of all this, is they don't encrypt very often. If they encrypted, no one would break it.
Yeah, let's go to our listener, Scott, in Evansville, Indiana. Scott, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just think Snowden, if he was spying, he was actually ended up spying for the American people instead of the American government. And it's just strange at how we want to charge him with spying when all he done was told the American public what was going on. Everybody had assumed it. I mean, and the balance between the freedom and the privacy, I agree with that, but there was a point in time until our recent history where Americans were willing to die for their freedoms, and now we've got everybody saying that we're willing to give up all of our privacy for our, you know, for our safety.
For protection. And you don't see it spying for the American people. Scott, I appreciate your call. Bill Banks, I have to say that for somebody who's spent a little time in the Cold War years, and even now, it is odd to hear the American government bringing espionage charges against someone putting information out in public. We have associated that with what you would hear off the streets of Beijing or Moscow when a dissident speaks up there in or outside the government is charged with espionage. This doesn't seem like the American way, Bill.
That's an important point. It's true that the Espionage Act is not a good fit for leakers. Congress has attempted in recent years to fashion a better bill. It runs into political difficulty and First Amendment problems every time. In this case, if you believe General Alexander and others who've talked about the harm that was done to the collection methods by revealing this stuff, Then you've got a guy who was fully read into these materials, who knew that what he was doing would compromise our ability to collect intelligence against terrorism internationally. And if that's the case, he's not only violated his contract and his non-disclosure agreements, but he's done harm to the United States, and he could and should be criminally punished.
But is such law available for them to use, or you're saying this is all they've got, the Espionage Act?
The Espionage Act is the best thing they've got. They've got the theft of government secrets, theft of property. That's a separate charge, and there may be a computer crimes element to this by the time that it rolls up. But the Espionage Act is probably the central offense here.
Mm. It's going to
include the requirement that you have an intention to have information that could be injurious to the United States or the advantage of a foreign nation.
Let me go to Missy in Omaha, Nebraska. What do you think, Missy?
Hi. I was just going to comment. I think that individuals who are screaming about their privacy have very little idea of what these programs actually are collecting, because unless most people, even with cell phones, just know that they don't know people's numbers, and metadata, all it is numbers. So they don't know whose it is. They don't know, you know, the government is pretty careful about what they collect when it comes to, or what they look at when it comes to Americans.
Missy, let us pick that up. Yeah. Bill Banks, do you buy that characterization, Bill, at this point? It's just a big pile of data. Don't worry about it, Americans.
Well, I think the two programs do have very different dynamics and very different significance for us. I think the PRISM program, as you described, is one that if we thought about the law that Congress enacted in 2008, we might have envisioned PRISM. It's doing exactly what the law authorized.
And remind us, that's where they're putting all the metadata together.
No, that's the one where they're looking outside the United States.
Oh, everything globally, right.
At everything that's going on real time.
Reading, yeah.
And I think that's the program that General Alexander is referring to here primarily.
Mm-hmm.
The metadata program is in a way more troublesome because the legal source of authority for it is a so-called business records provision in a law which was thought by the drafters of the law years ago to apply to single discrete records on named individuals or groups, not the collection of all this telephony data that may include your call to me or Missy's call to her grandmother.
Missy thinks of it as a kind of, not very useful, not very intrusive pile of data. Do you agree with that characterization?
Not necessarily. I think in addition to the privacy concerns here, you have First Amendment concerns on that end as well, where individuals feel that if the government is going to take note of every call or email transaction that they enter into, that they'll think twice about who they're calling or who they're going to send a message to.
Anthony in Fredericksburg, Iowa. Anthony, you're on the air.
Hello. I just had a question. Under this ideal, should we not as well go after Dick Cheney, who outed Valerie Plame of the CIA, in which case he literally and physically put Americans' lives in jeopardy, and not just philosophically?
What, Espionage Act for the vice president? I don't know. Jim Goodale, what about the relative weight of these things? And where do we go here in an era where, with a couple of thumb drives, you know, that can slip in your pocket, you can put so much of American foreign policy and intelligence right out in the sunshine?
Well, I'm just a layman who looks at intelligence, and I have done so ever since the Pentagon Papers case. but I would like to suggest that we're going to have to rethink our whole intelligence program vis-a-vis how it's classified, what it's supposed to do, what do we do about telling the public about it before we adopt these bills. One point that should be emphasized is that the public really didn't know what it was that Congress put into place with these two programs. The public has to be more involved with the intelligence debate. And it's very, very hard to do because the government doesn't want to have that debate necessarily because it discloses more than they want to disclose.
If the public needs that, is Edward Snowden a criminal for putting it out where that can begin?
Well, I think the question of what sort of punishment he should have is up in the air. And I would think probably you would give him, in my scheme of things, some time in prison. But Look at Thomas Drake, the gentleman to whom I referred earlier in the program. He was just fined for all practical purposes. I think we have to rethink the whole business, because it's going to be very hard to keep all this information in our possession the way we did before we had the net.
Bill Banks, are we going to see a parade of Americans who just don't like the way this is unfolding go to prison to, in their own light, stand up for American freedoms?
I don't think so. I think, you know, Mr. Drake, that's a great comparison to Drake, but he was really a whistleblower. Financial waste, bureaucratic dysfunction, and maybe some illegal activities at NSA. And as Mr. Goodale said, he ended up, when the judge saw the case, he thought it wasn't much of a case, and the guy pled guilty to a misdemeanor count of misusing a computer.
Edward Snowden describes himself as a whistleblower. We've got 30 seconds here.
Yeah, I think not. I think, again, he's revealed information that does a significant palpable harm to the security interests of the United States.
But if he hadn't, would we know, would we have any idea what was going on?
We would have to have a trial for those facts to come out.
Well, if he's caught, I guess we'll have one. If he achieves asylum, maybe we never will. I don't know how many Julian Assanges and Edward Snowdens will be parked in spots around the world before this digital age of ambiguity runs its course. Very grateful to the two of you for being with us today. William Banks, joining us from Syracuse, New York. Mr. Banks, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
And James Goodale, author of Fighting for the Press, The Inside Story of the Pentagon Papers and Other Battles. James Goodale in New York, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.